Anita, how's your mental health?
Questionable at all times, you know this.
Yeah, how's the mental health of your children?
Also a little bit tricky. Can I tell you my experience in trying to find therapists for myself and my kids, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is how it goes. You ask around your friends and your family for a referral for somebody who's nearby. You finally find somebody who sounds like they might work for your family. You give them a call and you find out that A, they're not accepting new patients, or B, they have a huge wait list. So you start over again and you ask people if they know anybody who would be a good therapist and a good fit. Finally, you find one, you go and you meet with them, and you figure out that you don't actually like them that much. But it's been so much work to find somebody who you can go to in your area that you're kind of stuck with them. Well, do you have any ideas for how to get around this?
I do because guess what? I've actually had some therapists that I have found on my own, which involves what you're saying. Sometimes I remember one time I was like 3 hours in the bathtub on my phone looking through websites. I was such a prune at the end. But I have also had the experience with working with BetterHelp, and it was like I don't want to say too good to be true, but because it is true, but it's like amazing because I was matched with my therapist within 24 hours.
And you didn't have to go through all of that other ridiculous process of trying to find somebody. And here's the cool thing, too, is if that person didn't work out for you, you can just switch and say, and it's not like you're committing to another years long search for somebody who you're going to jive with.
That's true. And I lucked out, or maybe just BetterHelp is really good at matching people together because I never had to change my therapist. I loved her, perfect fit for me. And I know that some of our friends have used BetterHelp and they've had to change therapists, and boom, same day, you can change.
Easy
You can ghost your therapist, get a
peasy.
new one.
I love this idea. BetterHelp is one of our sponsors. If you use our promo code trybetterhelp.com/WWDN, you get 10% off your first month, and we totally recommend it.
Yes, get some therapy. That's
Ha.
trybetterhelp.com/WWDN. Everybody, everybody, we're back. Can you believe it?
Mel, welcome back to the
Oh
world.
my gosh, I'm not even in the world, but the podcast must go on because everyone's grieving.
I feel like a whole lifetime has happened since we were last together. So, shall we do a little update on what is happening?
Oh gosh, yeah, let's go for it. You go first.
Well, first Christmas happened, and I honestly can't even remember Christmas. It happened. I was sad. I do remember Christmas. I was almost sadder than I was the year before. And I think it's because as I'm getting further away from Jason dying, it's almost like everybody else has moved on. And so people aren't carving out space for him anymore. And so I am just holding that on my own, if that makes sense. So that's all I'll say about Christmas. And how was your Christmas?
Good. My whole holiday season was good. I would even venture to say probably one of the best so far. And it's funny because my dad and I were even talking about that on January 1st. Do you want me to go into the whole story?
Yeah, I think so.
Guys, oh, I know that you all know like the basics of this. Here is how my holiday break went. I had a great time skiing. I have gotten back to skiing after 4 seasons since Scott died, and I'm like, okay, I can do this again. This is good. So my legs were getting stronger. I even got a new pair of powder skis. Everything is chill. New Year's Eve comes and goes, and the next day was a Saturday, which was New Year's Day. And luckily, the tennis facility where we play every Saturday, my dad and I, was open. And so I texted him that morning. I'm like, Dad, are we playing tennis? And he said, yeah. So I go up there. We had our traditional cheesy egg breakfast that he always makes us. We ate it. We went, we played tennis together. But on the way, my uncle called and said, I locked the keys out of my house and you have an extra key. Can you come and help me? And my uncle lives a half hour away from my dad. And my dad's like, well, yeah, but I'm gonna be there at 10:30 because I'm playing tennis. So I'll see you after. Go hang out at a neighbor's house. So this was at like 8:30 in the morning, right? So my dad and I played tennis. We had great talks. We always had great talks during tennis. And Anita was privy to a lot of those because often on our breaks, I would text her, this is what my dad is unpromptingly saying to me. And they're so funny. But we had a lot of talks about seriously everything in life. And we are, of course, not scared about talking about death, which I've mentioned on the podcast before. My dad's mentioned when he, quote, gets hit by the bus, there's a binder in his office. And like, I know exactly what his wishes were, right? So anyway, we were commenting how it was the best Christmas season we had had so far. My sister struggles with some mental health issues and everything was copacetic on Christmas. So we were like, this is a victory. Cool. And then we get back after a good game.
Wait, did he beat you?
He always beats me.
I just needed to clarify that. It was like his one final victory.
I know. My dad had always beat me. I mean, I got to the point where I could beat him like a couple tiebreakers here and there, but he always would beat me. And anyway, so we get done and he took me back to their house, dropped me off, and he's like, I'm gonna go help my brother get himself into his house. So he leaves, and my parents had friends staying over for the holiday to hang out with them. And these are friends that are from California. They've gone on trips together and they just had so much fun all the time. And my dad roped the neighbors into being best friends with them. So like my parents were like having a great time. And even in the car on the way back from tennis, my dad was mentioning how much fun they had the night before. And they just seemed like kids. Like, yeah, it was just couples and we had so much fun. We had party hats and the blower balloon thingies and the kazoos, and we played tons of games and a lot of laughs. So anyway, he had a great night before our tennis game. Okay, so I'm at my mom's house and I'm like, I gotta go take Anita her gift for Christmas because I hadn't seen her. So I go to your house and my dad goes to my uncle's house. And then you and I are hanging out, whatever. I gave you an amazing gift. Tell everyone.
It has been very popular. It is a toilet that you push the plunger down and it shoots a poo out of the top. And then your job is to catch the poop. And if you catch the poop, you win. And speaking of random dad things, my dad, I made my dad play it and he could not just play it. He had to crack the code for how many plunges it took for the poop to pop out. And then he wrote it on a label maker, because that's what my dad does, and labeled the plunger, so that you could know when the next poop pop would happen.
Wow. So he figured out the pattern.
Yes. And I have no idea how long it took him, but probably more time than it was due.
Anyway. Oh my gosh. So that is what Anita and I were dealing with after my tennis game with my dad. So then I leave Anita's house and I'm going to go work on some projects and stuff. So I'm driving on the freeway and I'm on the phone with my friend. And I get about 10 minutes from Anita's house and my mom calls me. Now, my mom never calls me. She always texts me. And I have this fear that whenever I see my mom call me, that means somebody has died or something is wrong.
Yeah.
But I had had dreams that my dad had died in the month of December, 3 in a row. But then the dog died. And so I thought that that's what it meant, because it was my dad's like heart dog. So I was like, okay, my dad's going to be okay. I always also had a fear of my dad dying during tennis. So every time we would get done with a tennis game, I was like, he made it. And he was healthy. He had great like vitals all the time. He would get his heart checked all the time. He was like tip top shape, right? He just was like aging and that's it. So my mom calls and she's like, I'm going to speak very calmly and I don't know a lot of information. And then she relayed to me that my dad, when he got to my uncle's, had slipped and fallen and was unconscious, and she didn't know much more than that. And it sounded like he wasn't breathing, but the ambulance was taking him to the hospital. And so she told me which hospital it was. And I said, I'm going to go straight there. So I go straight there, and she was having her friends that were staying at the house go with her to bring her to the hospital. I'm like, just meet me at the hospital. And I don't know if I've told you this. Maybe I told you this, Anita. I can't remember. But now I'm telling the world. So I call my friend back because I had my dog with me. I'm like, I need you to meet me at this hospital. And he was already heading the same way, so it was perfect. So I'm like, meet me. This is the address. I don't know what's going on. I have no idea. So I get off the phone and I'm like, my dad's in the car with me and my dad is dead. And I'm like, that's crazy, Mel. You think like that all the time. Stop it. Just because you've had dreams of this and just because you got this weird cryptic phone call that you couldn't tell what was going on and your mom didn't know because your uncle was like breathless and a disaster, that doesn't mean he's dead. Stop looking for the worst. And I just had this feeling. My dad was in the car with me and he's like, I'm gone and it's going to be okay. And you know what I want. And that was it. So then I get to the hospital parking lot. My friend is there. And so I'm thinking, okay, just take Scotty. Just take Scotty to your house and I'll come get him later. And then a voice said, do not go in alone. You need to not be alone. So my friend, I go, hey, I don't know where people are in my family, but they're on their way here. It might be like 30 minutes. Can you go in with me? And he's like, sure. So we go in and it was so eerie. The ER was totally silent. There were no people in there. And I go to the front desk and they couldn't find my dad. They couldn't find his information. And I was like, well, there you go. He's dead. He died in the ambulance and didn't even make it to the hospital. Then they're like, let us look for him because we did get somebody in here. We couldn't find their information.
Yeah.
Long and short of all the details, my cousin that helps us with the podcast and with our Instagram, she was out of town and she was the only one that I could get a hold of to get in contact with the aunts and uncles. And it just so happened that her parents that live even further away than my parents do from my uncle were like 10 minutes away. So I was in the ER by myself with my friend and then her parents showed up and she's a nurse. My aunt is a nurse. And then gradually like family started coming in. And it was a long day. I had a lot of support. My mom had a lot of support. We didn't have a lot of information, but everybody knows the outcome of this. And Anita was there too. And I remember when I called or texted you, I think I texted and you were like, how are you feeling about this? What did you say?
I said, are you nervous? Or are you freaking out? Something like that.
I think you said, are you or do you think it's bad? And I said, very. And normally, Anita, you and I joke about all of the things, but like, it was no joke. So you came and I go, Mom, Anita's on her way. And she goes, can you ask her to go get the book in Dad's office? That's the When Jim Gets Hit by a Bus folder. And so you had to get it. And because my dad told us about it, it's his advance directive, all that stuff. She knew where it was. She brought it. The long and the short of it is my dad ended up dying that night. Here's what happened. He slipped on ice, fell backwards. The injury was a result of his neck hyperextending forward, probably, and breaking his spine at the C3 level, which means you're a quadriplegic. And we did not know that he had an arthritic condition that fused his spine together. And so as soon as he slipped and hyperextended and that cracked, he also had a stroke at the same time. So instant quadriplegic, instant stroke. And the doctor told us that he was most likely gone before he even hit the ground, which sounds weird, but it's a comfort to me because I didn't want him to be scared or like stressed out in the snow because he was laying in the driveway for a while. We didn't know. All these weird things lined up. Like it just so happened one of my cousins from Texas that was there when Scott died landed in Salt Lake to take her kid to college right when she got the news about my dad. So she came to the hospital and it was as soon as that happened, I was like, I know exactly what's happening. And I don't think I was wrong about my dad being in the car with me and telling me those things. So my dad unfortunately died 5 minutes after midnight, January 2nd. It's been a sucky start to the new year, and I am now learning what it is to be a widow with a mom that is a new widow and trying to help and also watch and be helped. And that's been my life. So thanks to everybody who has been so kind in sending messages and in being so understanding that we didn't get our first episode of the year out when we were going to. I was actually editing it right before I went to tennis. And so I'm sorry about that, but I know you all understand. So I really appreciate that and all the kind words and vibes. And my mom is a widow, guys. Oh my gosh.
So something I will never forget is we were standing in the emergency room and your mom had just gotten some information. And all the information came really slowly and kind of piecemeal. And it was hard to figure out what was going on. It was just a lot of waiting. And she looked up at both of us and she said, I didn't want to join your club yet. And we all grabbed each other and gave each other a big hug. And I wish I had a picture of that moment because it was kind of a, like bittersweet, sad. But I was also like, we have got you too, you know? But it's so hard.
I know. I was hoping, seriously, for like 10 years since Scott's death so that I could get my energy back. And I didn't think my dad would die. If he did die, it had to be the super weird freak way. By the way, my dad's probably just like, doop doo doo, I'm fine. Oh, I slipped. Oh, and there's my body. And he's happy and fine. I know it is. And the doctor was like, man, this guy knew what he wanted and didn't want. This is an amazing advanced directive. So when he was giving us options, you know.
Yeah.
But I know, being a widow, we hate welcoming people to the club. And we also are like, we got you, and we feel this solidarity, and just, I don't know what it's just like a need to want to be there and help others. So that's been what's going on. And there are so many things that I am grateful for, even though there was death and it's sad and we did all that stuff and are going through it again and in a different way. For those of you whose person died during COVID, and you did not get to see them, or they died of COVID and you did not get to be with them in the hospital, or if you are a healthcare worker and you work with people that were not able to be with family before they died, I have a whole new appreciation for you, because I was able to get to be with my dad, and my friends and family were able to be with me, and my mom had support, and we were able to be around him when we said goodbye. And it just, my heart was so wrecked and my body just felt like, you know, the Wolverine scratching through my innards from the death. And then I thought of my friends and all those who listened to this who did not get that. And I don't have words other than I'm so sorry and devastated that that was the situation, because it's not fair. It's hard enough as it is. So that was something that was on my mind that day.
Yeah.
Sometimes we assume that unless we had a huge life insurance payout, we don't really need to know anything about investments or even finances. But guess what? A little knowledge of finances is critical for all of us. Maybe your partner was in charge of that stuff, and now you find yourself making all the decisions. Maybe you're mad about that. Maybe I am. Nicole from the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast is here to help. She tackles financial literacy by telling the stories of women and widows and finance experts, and shares the lessons they've learned as certified financial planners. Whether you know a lot and feel confident in your financial decisions or feel unsure about all of that stuff, there is more to learn. Listen and subscribe to the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast on all podcast platforms. This ad was paid for by Rockhouse Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Well, the good-ish news is that your dad and Jason are death day neighbors now, because the day after your dad died was Jason's death anniversary, which was very strange because I felt like a lot of that was sucked up in what had just happened to your dad. And so I didn't have a lot of time to really stew on it and think about it. We gathered at the cemetery, but I have to tell you that right before we went to the cemetery, my 11-year-old was pawing around in the hall closet and then was screaming bloody murder, and he had pepper sprayed himself right in the face. And it was awful. I was like, everybody get out of the house. I mean, you couldn't breathe. It was like coughing and sneezing, and he's like crying. And I was just like, you cannot make this up. So we were late to the cemetery and everybody's like, what's going on? I'm like, oh, Ollie pepper sprayed himself in the face. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, you know, as one does. Anywho, but it was nice. We gathered together with friends and talked a little bit about Jason and how he did a report in 11th grade on the country of Panama and just took his boombox out and played Van Halen's Panama and then sat back down. And that was the extent of his report.
Did he seriously?
Yes. Yeah, I just passed my 3-year mark, and it's been a weird couple of weeks, Mel.
I know. And you know what, Anita? One thing that I think is so cool that you do is on Jason's death anniversary, you have people send pictures or tag you in pictures of them with a mustache. I think it's a really great way to remember Jason. And it's fun, too. It's not like morbid.
Yeah. And it's easy. It doesn't take too much effort. And people are always like, did he have a mustache all the time? And I'm like, no, but it's just been like the easy representation of him. So yeah, that's always fun.
We did have a sad moment though, because I did send Anita a picture of my dad with a mustache.
Oh, it was.
Wasn't that the
worst? Yes. And then I sent you back a little video of him at your pre-Thanksgiving pie night where he was dancing.
Oh, I know. Anita, you know what? I'm so glad that you got to be around the weird family shenanigans this last year.
I've gotten to know your family really well, even all your cousins now.
I know. Our family just keeps expanding. Yes. Thanks to death. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention, if this even matters, is back to my dad. The paramedics worked on him for about 30 minutes and they did get a heartbeat back. So we did have his body to say goodbye to. So if you were like, wait, you said your dad was gone before he hit the ground, but then you were in the hospital. That's what happened.
Yeah.
So
he was gone, but not gone.
He was gone, but not gone. And we had a funeral. And you guys know that I talked about widow statistics to help my mom. So yes, we'll talk more on that another time. But for now, we're glad to be back. And it's a new year. And it started off as a sucky year. It's just a year. Whatever. This is our life, right?
Yes. So you guys, we've just given you the longest update of forever and all time. But come join us in the Widow Wives Club on Facebook. It's still happening. We're still welcoming all the new and not new widows and widowers in. So come find us on Facebook. And yes, you do have to answer all the questions and submit it all. And I know that's annoying, but it's to protect the people of the club.
Yes. So if you get mad at us, we understand. It's also for protection because it's a digital platform and we're doing our best and there's only so much we can do. Also, if you are interested in supporting the podcast, please consider joining our Patreon. We have 4 levels starting at $5 a month, and at the Widow Bestie level, which is $10 a month and up, you get a shout out in episode, and we're gonna do that right now.
We're gonna start with our secret dead husband, and to our secret dead husband, to all of you, we say keep going in the new year, no matter what it brings.
Next, we have Constance Dahlbeck,
David Kelly,
Don Satterwhite,
Gail Paxton,
Ivan the Meisner,
Kat,
Krista Waite,
Sam Finlayson,
Amy Hartman Martell,
Amy Sapp,
Ashley Hahn,
Chris Steffen,
Christina Shiflett,
Danielle Ketterberg,
Not a Debbie Downer,
Dennis Brozzo,
ooh, Jenny Taylor,
Jennifer Beal,
Jennifer Brown,
Jennifer E. Hassel. It's a lot of Jennifers.
I know, I was going to say, we got a lot of Jenny's Jennifers. Jenny Wang,
Kathy Murray,
Kelly Ford,
Kirsten Stromberg, congratulations soon.
Yes, Laura Bradbury,
Lauren Old,
Leslie Webb,
Marie Hoffman,
Mary Catherine Anderson, welcome,
Missy Schubert,
Rachel Barbosa,
Sarah Morris.
Oh, and then my mom, the new widow,
the widow
Sylvia
Shore.
There's 2 widow Shores.
I know. Taylor Snyder,
Karen Cornejo,
Vicky Spitt, the widow of Kirkhoff,
Anna Tracy,
Christina Scambato,
Christine Anderson,
Cindy Raynaud,
Mindy Holmgren,
Don Barber,
Debbie Fells,
Diana Becker,
Emily Toledo,
Aaron Posick,
Gabe Lozano,
Gia Benoit, or Benoit.
Wasn't there a basketball player named Benoit Benjamin?
I don't know.
Gina Haas,
Ian Cini,
Ileana Bell,
Jacqueline,
Jane, not the widow, fingers crossed.
Oh, don't say
knock
that.
On wood. Okay, okay.
Jenny Barrow,
Ms. Jocelyn Milo,
Joy D. Kirsch, CFP, CFT,
Julie Stevenson,
Karina Jacobo,
Katie Radcliffe,
Kara Scara, who I spent a lot of time with.
Yes. Lindsay Kanopka,
Lori Farrington,
Marjorie Lewis,
Mary McGowan,
Megan Montague,
Peter Rukavina,
Becky Zyba,
Sarah Kennedy,
Shannon Helm,
Stacy Saywert,
Sunshine Haven,
Tara Wallace,
Valerian Packer, and thanks for making a tennis ball bouquet for my dad, Wendy, when the florist didn't want to.
Can we just pause for just a second and tell you that 2 of our alumni are getting married? Jason Clausen and Kirsten Stromberg are tying the knot!
In a few weeks!
Yes.
Congrats, guys!
By the way, I take responsibility for their relationship when I have no responsibility to take, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
If that makes you feel good, go for it.
Yes. Cool.
If you want to join our Patreon, it's patreon.com/WWDN.
If you don't want to join our Patreon, but you do want to send us on a taco excursion, go to buymeacoffee.com/widowwedonow.
And if you don't want to do any of that, totally cool. We get it. We're all widows here and widow friends. So just give us a good rating and review. And if you hate us, just don't say anything.
I feel like they wouldn't have made it this far in the podcast if they hated us.
Also, everybody, there were things that I was working on over the break that are going to be exciting new announcements. I'm not ready to tell you about them yet, but please expect those to come soon.
Yay!
I just needed to get the funeral and everything out of the way, and we're stoked to announce whatever that is, which is a secret to you soon. And this episode is going to be so much fun. Anita, tell us.
We have been working on this for a while, and it is an update episode. So we reached out to our first 20 guests and asked them to update us on their lives and let us know how it's going a few months, years, whatever, down the road from their loss. So we had a number of them submit updates, and we're going to go through and listen to what's going on in their lives now.
Yes, and we don't have 20 now. We have 13 because widows have widow brain or busy lives. So for those that we didn't get this time, we will catch you next time. Thank you to everyone that submitted. And this took several months to put together. So you might notice that some are referencing summer times and it's winter now. So, you know, go with it. All right, let's get to it.
I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
We are two young widows and we are just trying to figure out widow.
We
do
now. This episode is sponsored by the Meisner Family Foundation in memory of Elizabeth Meisner. All right, everybody, here we go. Our first episode update is from our friend Lynn Rothrock. She was featured on episode 18 and is from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Lynn is one of my very, very good friends. She is a vocalist, and we knew each other before we became widows. And within months of becoming good friends, we both became widows. Here's her update.
This is Lynn Rothrock checking in. I spoke with you almost 2 years ago, I think in April of 2020, maybe. I'm doing well. Not a lot has really changed since that podcast time, except I would say that in general, I do have a better social life, as much as COVID will permit. I will go out and see things, and I'm a little more active with other people, which I think is healthy and good. No big changes in my life since then. I would say that I went through a period where I really felt like, oh, I'm over the worst of this grief. I'm doing great. That would have been like last spring, I think. And then over the summer, I just got really depressed and griefy again. So I'm convinced that it is an ongoing journey and not one that can be understood or mapped out. But in general, time definitely helps. And I am in general better. I had to actually just send a note to a more recent widow the other night, and the only thing I could offer, because there's just nothing you can really do to make it better for someone else, but the only thing I could say was what somebody said to me that was true, is that it does get better. It just does. It's just the passage of time and putting one foot in front of the other. It does get better. I did make a big purchase recently. I purchased a brand new bed, which I sorely needed. And I went from the giant king-size bed that we had that Ron was very sick in. And I downsized to a queen, but I upgraded the quality of the mattress and got a portable bed frame. And it was kind of emotional. Like, I felt kind of funny about that bed going out of my house. I mean, in the end, it was the best thing, but it was a step. And I thought, well, like, I always had his Stratocaster guitar on the bed, on the other side of the bed. Now the bed isn't really big enough, so I put it on a guitar stand right by the bed. So I guess I'm not sleeping with his guitar anymore. I'm sleeping in a fabulous new bed that I do love. I'm happy to say that I got to see both of his kids at Christmas, which is nice because one never knows when you're kind of the add-on third wife, if you'll still be included with the kids and stuff. And I'm so far very appreciative that I still have connections with his kids. And the one thing that I will say is that when Ron was sick, he died in February. That Christmas, we always really liked having the Christmas lights up and my Christmas tree. And I heard him tell someone, this year, I'm going to leave the tree up as long as Lynn will let me, because I really like the lights. And so I haven't taken it down since. And that was 4 years ago. So I'm looking at it right now, and I leave it up year round, and I turn the lights on, and it makes me, it just is cozy in here with the lights on. And I guess it kind of makes me feel close to him. That's kind of where I'm at. I'm working a lot and pretty happy about the work I'm doing now. Wishing COVID would be over so that I could fully re-engage, but he's very present in my mind all the time still, and I haven't even begun to think about selling this house. There's no reason for me to, but, and I haven't really done anything major to move on, but maybe I'll say I'm kind of more open to that than I used to be. Whatever that means, I don't know what that means exactly, but I'm kind of more let's just see what's going to happen. I'm so proud of you, Mel and Anita, for your podcast and how many people it helps. So good work, ladies. And I'm glad I got to sing the widow song, because I'm a widow. Every time my phone rings, I hear it. All right. Love you both. Bye-bye.
Yes, I'm a widow, and there ain't nothing I can't do.
All right, this update is from Becky Menzie. Becky was one of our first guests. She was on episode 19 in April of 2020. Let's hear how Becky is doing.
It's Becky Menzie responding to your questions. Have you waded into the dating pool? Well, yes, I did. I mentioned on the podcast that I had gotten remarried. After about 4 years after Earl's death, I all of a sudden was ready to date. I kind of knew it. And I told some friends. I was, you know, just if they knew of anybody really interesting that I was looking. I got online. A friend convinced me to go online. And that was actually fun for me. You know, even when I knew pretty quickly, or they knew pretty quickly, that we weren't going to be romantic. You know, for most of the times we had pretty good good talk. And if it was something that was pretty much sexually motivated, I kind of moved on if I knew that. And on there, I met a man, and he turned out to be really terrific. I had said I would never marry again, and that turned out to be a lie. I had absolutely no reason to not marry this guy. He was my soulmate and a wonderful partner, and I also knew in aging how valuable having a true partner is. And a marital partner, the business of illness and death and different things. So we did. We've been married. We just celebrated our 4th anniversary. It's going good so far. The next update, we'll just have to check and see. The question, have you accomplished anything amazing since last we talked? I have continued to work. I worked through COVID. Mel even gave me some great advice on equipment to buy and how to actually facilitate some of the ideas I wanted to do. And that was something I was really grateful for. But I have never been the girl who goes, I want to perform on Broadway, or I want to perform at Carnegie Hall. Now, I have performed at Carnegie Hall, but I didn't necessarily set those goals. I did think what venue in Chicago, the area, would I like, and it was Ravinia, and I got that contract. COVID took it away, but hopefully that'll come back. And I just kind of like to live my life in every day is a new adventure kind of thing. And sometimes, you know, they don't have to measure up to the next day. Some days I just can't, you know, be as brave or be as driven. But I'm saying that I'm kind of looking for sometimes an amazing day to be walking out by Lake Michigan where I live. So aspire for necessarily as amazing or perfect. Definitely not. I aspire for wonderful. Has your support system changed? I would say that yes, because my husband has added to that pool of friends where I can, you know, discuss. A lot of my friends' parents are dying, and that is also a grief process in tandem with losing your husband. And the best addition has been, you know, my husband. What piece of advice would you give your early grief self? Well, I have a definitive answer for that. Ask for help. I didn't. I'm very independent. And the grief and the stress on my body, stress is such a harmful toxin for physical health. And I created a psoriasis, a skin disease, pretty much stress induced. And we got that healed, but because it was now chronic and in my cells, I will never be able to be off those drugs. Because my doctor told me back then that I would probably have that develop into psoriatic arthritis. And I did, and it affected my hands, and I'm a piano player. I'm a singer-piano player, but that piano is just where I not only make the bulk of my income, but where I come alive. So I created a disease that affects the thing that is most precious to me. And I deal with it every day. The pain, the drugs, medicines beget other medicines. So if I could have changed anything in my early grief system, I would have taken some time off to heal. I was afraid I wouldn't be able to pay my assessment. And I would have taken some time to heal, and I would have asked for help a little bit more. My guess is that of your listeners, and this could be incorrect, but my guess is that that happened the start of death. I had 3 deaths in a year and a half that were my best friend, my husband, and then my mother. And that was really traumatic. But that was when I was 50, and that's about 14 years ago. And I am happier or more peaceful than I have been. And I am grateful for that. And so I can be somebody to those who just aren't sure what their life down the road is going to look like. You don't know. But I do believe that you put yourself out there when you're ready and trust your body.
Next up, we have Brittany Buscio, episode 21. Brittany's episode was entitled Pool House Dweller because after her husband died from cancer, she was living in a pool house at her neighbor's house. Brittany is a lover of dogs and she's one of our good friends. We love her so much. And here is her update.
Hi, it's Brittany Buscio. I was on episode 21 with the pool house dweller. I do not dwell in the pool house anymore, but it was a lovely time. It was super fun. How are you coping now? My grief is definitely more manageable. I do notice a lot more triggers that I'm sure will never go away. What has gotten harder and easier? I think it's gotten easier just to breathe and to relax. That fight and flight doesn't, you know, the adrenaline doesn't come as fast. What's harder is figuring out the relationship with my in-laws and figuring out if I'm really invited on the vacation. And, you know, that's just an interesting place to be for all of us widows. They are so kind, but it's always interesting to know where to navigate because I've been widowed for almost 2 years in September. Have you made any big life changes? Moves, jobs? Yes, I moved a lot already, but since being widow, I've moved 2.5 times. My stuff's all in storage right now. And I live with my parents and I'm looking into school again, college. I just have some math to finish. So yes, everything's still changing and we're almost at 2 years. Have you waited in the dating pool? If so, how's it going? I had the greatest boyfriend around the time I started recording the podcast. He was such a gift. He was the kindest person I've ever met. We just broke things off last weekend. I think only the best things of him, and he helped me heal a lot with grief. He was exactly what I needed at the time, so I'm going to forever be grateful for him. I'm really scared to date again. Very overwhelming, but definitely feeling residual grief. It's definitely brought up a lot of loss, feelings of those things again. So that's been really hard, but I'm still grateful I had that time with him. Probably more to unpack there, but it's going okay. Have you accomplished anything amazing? I walked into that really great job as a teacher's aide, which I know isn't very prestigious, but it was really great for me to pour my energy into after being a caregiver for Anthony for a year. And I got Employee of the Year at my school. So that was really rewarding to feel seen and feel appreciated. So I'm grateful for the time I've had there. My support system's definitely changed. I live with my parents. And maybe it hasn't changed, actually. It's the same. It's the same. Whatever. Anyway, I'm grateful to have met so many of you through Facebook, through Instagram, and even in person. I'm so grateful that Mel and Anita have stuck with this. I'm so happy I could hear all of your stories and connect with you all and not feel alone in this really hard, weird time of life. So thank you for sharing your stories. And I look forward to connecting with all of you for as long as we can handle. We'll talk to you later.
Next, our update is David Kelly. Everybody knows David Kelly. David is one of our Great Widow Wives Club members. He's from Northern Ireland, now living in England. David was on episode 22 in May of 2020 during the height of the pandemic. Let's hear what's going on with David now.
How are you coping now, and is your grief more manageable? So I'm now 5 years on, and I'm more comfortable in my grief. It's more manageable. I'm more comfortable and familiar with it. And I've also grown around it, but I've also been reminded again, however, that at times I still need to work on it and process it. Grief curveballs can still come unexpectedly. The COVID-19 pandemic and lockdown situation here in the UK, early days when I recorded my episode, was one such curveball that hit me during the first lockdown period we had here in the UK. I unexpectedly re-experienced a lot of the apathy and isolation feelings that had hit me in the early days of my widowhood, and that had to be worked through again. What has gotten harder? What has gotten easier? This is not really a thing that's gotten easier or harder, but it's something that I've noticed has changed. Previously, I felt the duality of, on the one hand, it seeming like ages ago since my wife was with us, but on the other hand, also just seeming like it was yesterday at the same time. This was something that my son and I often reflected on. However, entering into my fifth year as a widow and reflecting upon things again, I no longer feel that duality. It just feels like ages ago now since my wife was with us. Have you accomplished anything amazing since we last talked? As for accomplishing anything amazing since my podcast, I'd say there's been a few widower wins. I've lost almost 100 pounds in weight. I've graduated from the Couch to 5K training program and taking up running on a regular basis, and I've even got a runner's medal from completing my first 10K race several weeks ago. Have you waded into the dating pool? If so, how is it going? So after my episode was aired, there was a subsequent episode featuring Karen Cornejo, aka Karen from Canada. There was a few things she raised in her episode that resonated with me, and so I messaged her about my experience on those matters. Corresponded via messages and numerous messages back and forth turned into telephone conversations, and from that our what had been a supportive friendship turned into a relationship. The COVID pandemic hasn't allowed us to meet up as yet, but we're hoping to have our official first date in September this year when she comes over to the UK. Only been able to have an actual first date now, given we've been in a long distance relationship for many months. Seems kind of strange, but I'm looking forward to it. How has your support system changed? My support system was impacted upon the whole COVID pandemic situation and the lockdown here in the UK. So whereas pre-pandemic, I would have had face-to-face contact with people in my support system, you know, maybe meeting up at home or going out for a coffee or meal or something like that, the whole lockdown situation put an abrupt end to that. However, one positive thing that changed, though, was having Karen as part of my support system, having a close relationship with the widow who also has teenage children. Has been a real blessing. We support each other. We hold space for each other's grief. And that includes accepting and having space for our spouses in our relationship too. Have you made any big life changes, moves, jobs, etc.? Many of my big life changes were made prior to my episode, such as changing careers to become a counsellor. However, starting a relationship with someone new during the past year has certainly been a big, unexpected, but positive life change. What piece of advice would your current self give to your early grief self? One thing I would say to my early grief self is look out for the comfort eating and get it under control. I was never a big drinker, but from my counselling work, I was very aware of using alcohol as a crutch or a coping mechanism for the emotional pain of grief. So I stayed well away from that, pretty much becoming teetotal. However, I fell into the trap of comfort snacking in the evenings and ended up putting on 70 pounds. Thankfully, I've since done something about that and lost that weight that I put on, and more still. But I could have saved myself and my health a lot of bother if I'd been more cognizant of that at the time.
Now, in case you're wondering, David and Karen were able to meet up in September. Since we got these updates before that happened, it wasn't included in their update. The trip happened, and it looks like they had a great time. Next up is Mindy Holmgren. Mindy was featured on episode 23 in May of 2020. Mindy was pregnant while she lost her husband to an accident while swimming. Here she is in her own words with her update.
So my support system hasn't honestly changed a ton. The real key people that were around right at the beginning, right after Corey died, are still mostly around. One big thing that's probably different, though, is just how much maybe I am trying to do more like by myself. You know, no one has brought me dinner for a long time, and my neighbor hasn't come to take out my garbages for a while. Like, we don't have friends coming over to mow the lawn or to weed the garden or the flower beds, you know, things like that. So there's a little bit of like, eventually you just have to learn to put on your big girl panties and figure it out for yourself, you know. I'm still close to a lot of the same friends though, and family, and I am really grateful for that. If I did really honestly need something, I do have people that I could ask. I would say that maybe our grief is a little bit more manageable now. That doesn't mean that we don't ever cry or fall apart. I just feel like we can carry it. I don't think the grief ball is any heavier. I just think that I am stronger in that sense. The grief is still there. My heart is still broken. But there does come a point where you just kind of learn to carry it and you learn to live with it. Our kids are doing really good, honestly. It's also hard to say that they're doing really good or that like I'm doing good, because I'm afraid that people are going to think like, oh, they're good now, they're all fixed, they don't need help or support, or, you know, phew, that was hard, I'm glad you're over that one. You know, like if you break your arm, eventually it gets all the way better and no one asks if your arm is okay anymore after the cast comes off. Like, it's just better and over and done with. And that can't happen with this. And so I like feel weird saying sometimes that like we're okay today, you know, or we're doing pretty good. And I'm grateful for the therapy that my kids have gone to. It's helped them out so much. I'm so grateful for that. That's been such a blessing to be able for them to learn how to deal with their triggers and for them to have some guidance in working with the trauma that they were experiencing and feeling, and the added pressures that come with now not having a dad in the house and things like that. So I'd say the kids are doing, you know, really good. And like, I'm pretty good too. And the grief is more manageable, but I just want to like scream from the rooftop still for people to know that it hasn't gone away, and it still is good to check on us once in a while.
Next is Liz Meacham. Liz lives in Australia. Liz is my alter ego from the other side of the planet. We interviewed Liz in June of 2020, and she's episode 25. Her husband, Pete, died suddenly, and you'll remember that when he fell down, he broke her toe. So let's hear what Liz is up to now.
Hi, Nader and Mel. It's Liz in Australia, and I'm giving you a little update from my wardrobe again, but it's a different wardrobe than where I spoke to you last time. So in the time since I last spoke to you, we have bought a house and moved, which was entirely challenging because it's in the same town, but it meant I had to go through a lot of the things of Pete's and make decisions about what I actually needed and what I didn't actually need in my life, which was going to be in a house which he never lived in, which was reasonably challenging, but also slightly cathartic, I think, because it probably forced me to deal with some of the things, most of them tangible, like 47 pairs of denim jeans and way more shirts than any man actually ever needs, and his university books, which he never actually finished the degree of, that we've been carting around for 20 years. I got rid of them because we didn't need them anymore. Anyway, what have I been up to? I am now about 2.5 years out. Grief seems a little bit more manageable, but I think the waves might be bigger. They're less frequent, but they're bigger, because when it hits, holy smokes, they hit hard sometimes. And it seems that when I go down, the kids go down too. So I now have 2 teenagers in the house, which is fun. They are all doing amazingly well, considering that pretty much the last 18 months of our life has been in and out of COVID restrictions. So when I last spoke to you, we were in a lockdown and remote schooling. I think that might have been the first one. Well, the state that I live in, we have now had 6 of those. So we had 2 in 2020, and we've had 4 in 2021. So the lockdowns in our states are often 7 days. Sometimes they do snap lockdowns for 3, and it means everything stops. Sport, shops, school, everything stops. Work, everything goes to home, and you're not allowed to go within 5 kilometres of your home. I live in a regional area, so sometimes we have some different rules, but basically we have to go in and out of lockdowns, which is appalling for all of our mental health, which is very challenging. I'm sure we are not the only ones dealing with that, and I have to keep remembering that. I think it has helped that I have been through a massive life change, that I have mastered the art of saying, oh, well, it is what it is. That is actually a ridiculously unhelpful statement. So for my younger grief self, I would say that anyone who says, oh, well, it is what it is, I might punch them in the face, because it's actually really shit. It is, of course, what it is, but it's still shit, and it actually diminishes just how hard it is when people say that. I'm allowed to say it. I say to people, it is what it is, but they're not allowed to say it to me, because that's my thing. I get to say when I dismiss it, not them. So things that have gotten easier or harder. Well, I think the quagmire is less thick as what it was. I often said that going through my early stage of widowing was like being in quicksand, like everything just felt heavy and hard. And there are still heavy and hard bits, but maybe it's not quite as big a pond of quicksand, or they're just smaller ponds, or this quicksand is thinner or thicker, whatever easier it is to get through. We still get bogged periodically, but we're not getting bogged as much as what we used to. We've basically just been doing life for the last little while. someone said to me that you shouldn't discount how hard it is or how wonderful it is just to actually get through the day. I don't actually do that a lot, which I probably should do a little bit more, because I am just trying to do life. And I guess if that's hard for me, that's a challenge that I guess I meet. And that's also the really shittest part of widowing, is the no choice thing. So I guess we're still here. We're still functioning. I'm not an alcoholic yet. I'm still talking to people from around the world from inside my wardrobe, surrounded by my clothes, which now have less of my husband's clothes in it, which is slightly weird. I think that we're okay. I think we're still doing okay. If we're not doing okay, we kind of stop and start again. But there's lots of things that are happening out of our control, which doesn't mean that we're okay or not okay with COVID, but everyone around the world's kind of doing it. So our world is good, albeit that we're minus a dad and a husband. And the idea of dating has crossed my mind. You know, we talk about a unicorn. I joined Tinder for 20 minutes and then deleted it because it's like a meat market out there. And I don't want to judge someone off a photo. A photo doesn't actually tell me what kind of person they are. And I've had enough Instagram random friend requests to know that a photo and a little bio probably doesn't tell you a lot about a person. And scarily, they're going to be judging me the same way. And I don't think that 41-year-old widow with four kids and a jumbo jet load of baggage that comes with that actually reads that great on an online dating profile. So we're not there yet, but, you know, the idea isn't as scary, maybe, as what it once was, because I'm kind of sick of only having kids in my bed. They kick. But, yeah, we're okay. We're still here and we're still functional. And I think I would tell early grief me that maybe it will be shit, but you'll still be here at the other end. And I feel like Dory a little bit. You just have to keep swimming. And the tide seems to turn a lot, but you just have to keep swimming. So that's what we're doing. We keep swimming, even though the pools are closed.
Next up, we have Hillary Childress. Hillary was featured on episode 26 in June of 2020. She is a fellow true crime connoisseur, like myself, and we really had a fun time interviewing her. Check out her episode if you'd like to get more familiar with her story. She lost her husband, John, to a construction accident. Here she is.
Hey guys, it's Hillary. I've definitely had some big life changes. Number one, I got a promotion at work, so that has added, I wouldn't say like a lot more onto my plate, but it's definitely ramped up my workload a little bit. That, and you know, I'm in the medical field, so everything's kind of opening, has been opened back up, but now it's shutting down. So it's just been kind of a crazy time, obviously. So also, I did sell my house and move while also in the process of building a home. So everyone knows like the housing market's crazy right now. So my house sold super fast and like the money was too good to turn down. So I sold my house, got a rent house. So in the middle of building a house. So that's fun. Everything else is pretty much the same. School started back last week. So that's also a part of, you know, getting busier. How are you coping now? Is your grief more manageable? Yes, definitely more manageable now. Definitely has gotten better over the last, I'd say, month and a half, 2 months. So for the first year, I was doing pretty well. Like, I'd even moved to like once a month with therapy and things like that. And something happened after that year mark. I don't know. According to my therapist, it was like I got out of survival mode or something and was able to finally feel. I had a lot of memories that came rushing back that I don't even think I shouldn't even say rushing back. Like, they just became clear for the first time, especially for that first week or two after John died. They really, it's like they all became clear, and that was hard on me. I had to kind of process all of those for the first time, or reprocess them, or however you want to see it. It was just really rough. Like, for example, the podcast I did with you guys, I did it after, I think it had been about 3 months, and I don't even like hardly remember it. Like, that was still in a time I was in such a daze. And like, when I listen back to it, I'm like, God, Hillary, you sound so good. Like, you sound like so, like you're coping so well. And now I'm like, yeah, it's because you were just still in that fog. And I don't want to say denial phase, but kind of like that. You know, I was just kind of just doing everything I could to, you know, not lay in a heap on the floor every single day. So that was the result, is a lot of foggy memories. But now they are all coming back, which is a good time. Have you waded into the dating pool? Yeah, I have actually. So started out as just friends several months ago. And it's someone I kind of knew before John died, but it was more just kind of like an acquaintance that we had mutual friends and stuff. He didn't know John. So yeah, I just started out as friends for a while, actually. And I guess just recently we decided to say that we were, I guess, dating. I don't know. It's just all weird. It's all very weird. I still feel married. So it kind of feels like you're cheating on your spouse a little bit. I don't know. It's just, that's kind of what's going on. I'll probably have to update you once this becomes not so new. But right now it's good. We're just taking it day by day and seeing how everything goes. All I know is right now it makes me happy. So as long as it's making me happy, then that's what I'm going with right now. I'm a happiness junkie right now. If it's happy, I'm going to be doing it. How has your support system changed? I haven't really had a big change in my support system. I still have the best family ever and the friends that I have. Everything has pretty much stayed the same. People still check on me pretty often. A couple of friendships have kind of fell off a little bit, but there's no hard feelings there. It's just more like I can tell that they are kind of uncomfortable with death and grief, and I just don't have the time or emotional bandwidth to educate them or make them comfortable with it. And so they either are or they aren't, and you know, I just try not to worry about that too much. I'm doing good. I still have hard days, obviously. I still go to therapy now. I go, you know, two or three times a month. Big proponent of that if you're able to. Abby's coping pretty well. School started back and that was kind of a rough day for her. She did have some sadness that day and we kind of just let it out, and now she seems to be doing really well. I'm more sad about the fact that she's in the fifth grade and just turned 10. It sounds so old, so I'm grieving that as well. But okay, bye.
Next, we have Karen Cornejo from Canada. Karen is episode 27, and we interviewed her in June of 2020. Karen's husband, Tico, was in Mexico when he died, if you'll remember. So let's hear a little update from Karen.
This is Karen Cornejo, also known as Karen from Canada. I am responding to your update episode email, and I'm very excited to hear how everybody is doing. So I'm going to go ahead and answer your questions. How are you coping now? Is your grief more manageable? I'm coping much better now, and my grief is much more manageable. When we spoke, I was only maybe 4 months or so out from Tico's death, and I was consumed with my grief at that stage. I didn't think about anything else. I woke up in the mornings not wanting to get out of bed, and so that has changed. I don't feel that way anymore. I am able to get up, get out of bed. I don't think about Tico constantly, and I think I've started to grow around my grief, and I've learned how to feel those feelings, the sadness, the anger, frustration, and all of it, but not let it consume me. I'm able to sit with it better and carry on with my life around it. So that's changed a lot. What has gotten harder? What has gotten easier? I would say the thing that I've probably struggled with more recently that I maybe wasn't at the very beginning was decision-making. I've found decision-making hard. I'm constantly looking for assurances from others, not trusting my judgment so much. I've lost confidence, I feel, in some of my decision-making. I will say more recently that has gotten better as I've had to make some bigger decisions had positive results from them. I think I'm starting to get that back, but that's definitely something that has been hard for me. What has gotten easier? I'd say the day-to-day life stuff has gotten easier. Regular, you know, waking up, doing things, items, fixing stuff. I'm not quite as, you know, I don't get quite as aggravated about having to do things that I don't want to do that wasn't my department. I still do, but I'm finding that kind of stuff a bit easier to get through. Have you made any big life changes? I've made some big life decisions, but maybe not so much big changes. I think maybe the biggest one was selling our condo in Puerto Vallarta. And I sold that without having been able to go down there because of COVID. So that was a difficult process. It was the right thing to do. I don't regret it at all, but it was hard. Also, my sister and I invested in a new property out in British Columbia, a ski place at Silver Star in BC. And that has, you know, that's also been a big change, but it's been a really positive one because it's a new experience that me and my kids and my sister have been able to enjoy. Have you waded into the dating pool? That's a very interesting question for me because I never really waded into the dating pool in the sense of putting myself out there to date someone. However, I am dating someone. And in fact, you know him. His name is David Kelly and he lives in England. He and I connected after my episode aired and the Widow Wives Club was founded. He stalked me. Well, he might see it a different way, but I see it as him stalking me. He messaged me and we've become very close friends very quickly. We've connected on so many levels and yes, we're in a relationship and I'm actually looking forward to going out to visit him in England in September. So yes, I've waded into the dating pool. It's going well. How has your support system changed? That's changed a lot. I think initially my support system was mostly consisting of, you know, me phoning my close friends and some family members. And I felt like I was just dumping all my feelings on them and I felt like a burden. I don't feel that way anymore. I think most of my support that has been helpful to me has come from fellow widows and widowers. David has been a big support for me with his grief counseling experience. He's helped me to tap into and process a lot of my feelings that I think maybe I might have avoided otherwise. And the biggest support for me has really been the Widow Wives Club and you guys and what you've done, because listening to others, hearing what everyone else is going through, it just really helps normalize the whole process and really has helped me to be able to function. And so that's been my biggest support, to be honest. What piece of advice would your current self give to your early grief self? Be patient and take the stupid sleeping pills is what I would tell myself. I think I felt at the beginning that there was no possible way that I could eventually feel better. And I do. And so I didn't, you know, the being patient about letting the feelings feel them, just let them come and don't try to avoid them. And also just not expect so much from myself. I really did ratchet down my expectations. I'm a pretty productive and driven person normally. So that was hard for me, but it really did help me to just slow things down, feel more accomplished in just accomplishing one or two things rather than 5 or 10 things. And really just learning to smell the roses more and appreciate the here and now, because when you have such a big change in your life, like the death of a spouse, you really realize how quickly your world can be rocked. And that would be, I think, the advice I would give myself is to slow down, be patient, and take sleeping pills.
Next up is Tragen White. Tragen was featured in episode 32. He and his daughter Hensley lost Tragen's wife Kim to cancer, and he was our second widower featured on the podcast. Here's his update.
How are you coping now, and is my grief more manageable? I would say that yes. I mean, that's kind of one of the best ways to heal, right, is just survive and survive and survive while grief is unmanageable. Get up, keep yourself clean, keep those people that depend upon you also alive, and until you can slowly start adding more things to your plate. And then you can not just keep yourself clean and alive, but you can do your hair. In the early stages of grief, I would just check out. I would wallow, or I would really just, you know, almost want to sleep and think, just to have some respite from reality. And that's dangerous because it can take you down some dangerous roads where you get into the habit of numbing. And if you start to numb in one way and realize it's a problem, then you find another way to numb. Yeah, so time is the great healer, right? So as time has passed, I'm getting better at explaining my grief maybe, or compartmentalizing my grief so that I can still function at a level that I'm okay with, and not shaming myself and feeling guilty because I'm not healed or I'm not functioning at the level that I did before Kim died. Yeah, just kind of taking it day by day and finding ways to manage. But I'm better off now. Like, I see where I need to improve me and get to know me again and rediscover Tragen. I don't know how to deal with being alone or being lonely with just me and Hensley. And then all of the stresses and things that come with dating. You know, I've stepped out and dated and had a really turbulent but great relationship with a wonderful woman. And then going through the loss of that relationship or an evolution of that relationship or, you know, going through that, I was like, man, maybe I wasn't ready to date. I don't want to date. I can't do this. It's like the grief of all of that makes other emotions and other griefs accentuated. You know, I'm focusing on a lot of different things. I'm trying to simplify life. Holy cow, my life is so much more simple than it has been, and I'm still trying to do it. Well, life is harder still in general, but I'm, you know, learning to let things go. Like, do I have to keep the house spick and span 100% of the time? Am I seriously going to lose time with Hensley or with something that brings me joy, like exercising or writing or something, so that I can clean the house again this week when my daughter's a hurricane and can successfully demolish the house within 30 minutes? No way. Like, at some point I had to be okay with the messy kitchen for a couple of days and maybe clean once a week for a couple of hours, not a couple of hours every single day. Have I made any big life changes, moves? No, and in fact, part of that is deliberate. It was a life change to date somebody for a while. That was a really big change and different. But no, I didn't want to. My uncle was murdered during Hurricane Katrina when he was down in New Orleans helping to rebuild. It was devastating, obviously. My aunt has and my cousins had gone through all of their own grief and the horror that is life trying to survive something like that. And she gave me a lot of great advice, and my Aunt Tammy said, hey, Tragen, I just, a bit of advice for you, don't make any huge life changes too soon. Have I waded into the dating pool? That's a hard one. Yeah, I talked about that a little bit. And it's not easy. Like, I haven't really dated. The person that I had a relationship and then, you know, working things out with and stuff is an old friend. And it's, you know, partly because of her situation and my situation, it's coming from both of us. We're both just kind of like traumatized, and we get along so well, but we are kind of at the point now where we're like, look, we need to, like, we're mature enough that we can talk about all of this, and it's great. It's so different than dating before, where you can talk about it and say, hey, I don't know myself right now. I need to be alone. Still part of me, you know, the lonely part of me that wants to be with somebody, but then there's the strong part of me that realizes that there's nothing wrong with being lonely. It doesn't mean you have to go be with somebody. Have I accomplished anything amazing since we last talked? Lower the bar because I'm a widow. Well, I do think I've accomplished a lot. I don't think anything that I say I've accomplished is going to sound like anything so great and crazy. But honestly, what I feel like I've accomplished something is kind of awakening to life.
What piece of advice would your current self give your early grief myself. Maybe start therapy sooner. That everyone over and over, I got sick of hearing it, would always just say, give yourself grace, be patient with yourself, take your time. And I feel like I've done that because I heard it so much. And that's true. Like, don't try to rush it because you can't rush it. It's going to happen when it happens. But also, don't be lazy about it. But being patient with yourself, don't continue when it's uncomfortable and you're really putting forth effort and you just keep after yourself. You got to do more, got to do more. You got to get back to normal. It's not going to happen. Like, be patient with yourself.
Next, we have an update from Hannah Lagasa. If you'll remember, Hannah was episode 35 and we interviewed her in September of 2020. Let's hear what's going on with Hannah.
Hey there, Mel and Anita. This is Hannah Lagasa, just answering some update questions. The first question I got from you was, how I'm coping and is my grief a little bit more manageable? More manageable, yes. Some days, no. But all in all, every day is good, except for a couple minutes or a couple hours, but it's manageable. It did feel like it got a little bit harder after year one. It just felt more real, realizing that Lucas is really gone. Just a lot of things that made me feel like it was a legit thing, that I was alone and having to figure out my life again. But there are some days where it does feel like it's gotten easier. I've tried dating a little bit, didn't like it, didn't even go on dates, just got onto a dating app, and that was even in itself too much. It felt, which I know mentally it's not cheating, but your heart feels like it is because you're still in love with someone else. I know that I'll be okay to start dating eventually, but right now I'm just going to kind of take a step back from it and focus on me. And my support system, it's stayed about the same. I still have all my very close family and friends that are with me and checking in on me daily. I've noticed that, you know, obviously those people that you weren't super close with kind of go away, which is to be expected. Doesn't make it easy. Not having that nonstop support is a little bit harder, but it's also good because it doesn't make you feel like you have to depend on them. I kind of have had to figure out how to handle my emotions myself and really sit with my feelings. And what piece of advice would your current self give your early grief self? Definitely to give myself grace. Be okay with crying. Be okay with feeling the emotions and okay with talking about it with other people that are truly worried about me and not just shutting myself out and trying to sleep and pretty much shut everything out. I also would say don't eat as much because I've had the grief weight gain, not the grief weight loss, unfortunately. But all in all, I'm feeling okay. I feel like I have a great group of people around me. I have two girlfriends that unfortunately are in the same position as I am. Lost their boyfriends or their fiancés weeks and months after I lost Lucas. So we kind of have moved through this past year together and kind of figured out how to really take on our grief in the early stages together. Maybe a little too much alcohol at times, but sometimes that's helpful. Anyway, just wanted to get you guys updated. Hope you're all doing well, and I listen daily. When I'm at work, I re-listen to episodes and just love your show.
Next, we have Melissa Brackman, who was featured in episode 38. 18 years ago, Melissa's husband, Scott, was murdered by a serial killer along with her mother-in-law and other employees of their family business. Those of you who are in the Widow Wives Club are already familiar with Melissa's current tragedy, and at the time of her recording this update, her tragedy had not yet happened. She spoke of her husband, Chad, that she had been married to for 6 years. He was a police officer, and unfortunately, this past November, he was killed while directing traffic. So she is a widow for the second time. Here's her update post-interview with us and pre-Chad's death.
This is Melissa Brackman, and I was interviewed many months ago, actually. The question, how am I coping now? I'm doing well, and I am 18 years out. My grief was, it was enhanced 4 years ago when they solved my husband's murder. And so I had to go through the grief process again in finding out why he was murdered and my mother-in-law and who had done it and his motive. And that was kind of putting, you know, opening up a wound and pouring salt in it. And I feel that I had to kind of start over from there and recope. I am doing really well. I have found a lot of purpose with the way I present myself to people. I love speaking to groups and talking about my story because I have felt that it does help others deal with their own trauma. Some of the things that have gotten harder for me are the fact that I was 30, and so was he, when he died, and I will be 50 next month. And so I have a hard time thinking about that. I don't know what has really gotten easier. I feel like I just cope better. The big life changes, I haven't made really any major changes in the past few years. I am going back to school just to get certified, and it's a four-semester process. I already have a master's degree, but since I'm teaching school, I need to be certified, and that's something I'm pretty passionate about. I am not dating, obviously, because I'm super happily married, and he's amazing and understanding and has been the best decision I made since Scott died. Some of the things that I've accomplished, I've almost been married 6 years. That's a huge accomplishment for me because I've never been married that long. And I feel like that is something that has always escaped me because I'm divorced as well. And so that's something I'm actually really proud of. My support system does change from time to time because I meet new people or I meet new widows or widowers, and we do things together and we kind of lean on each other. And so I do feel that it's changed a little bit, but I'm in the school system with a bunch of kids, with teachers, and I feel like, you know, the more people that hear my story and what happened, you know, the more support I actually get. I am currently finishing writing my book, which I hope to have finished this November, which will be the 19th anniversary of Scott's death. A piece of advice I would give myself right now would be not to hurry any relationship. I wish that I had known that. I wish that I had hung on to a little bit more money because I went on a crazy spending spree after he died. That's how I coped. But overall, I feel like I'm living my best life. I feel like I'm blessed. I feel like Scott would be proud of me. And I feel like the more I share, the more I benefit.
We've got Carly Kropf. If you'll remember, Carly is a therapist, and she came on to our episode to talk to us about dealing with our in-laws. We didn't get too much into Carly's story, but Carly's husband died when she was pregnant with twins, and this is a little update from Carly about how life is going for her now.
Hello, widow and widower friends. This is Carly. In the words of a Disney princess, some things never change. And since we last recorded our episode, many things have stayed the same. I still love Diet Coke. I still lose my patience with my kids. I still think Disneyland is the happiest place on earth, and my husband is still dead. Sometimes I think back on my early days of grief, and I just wish I could go back to that time. It was all consuming. It demanded my attention, and I could give it. Unfortunately, we can't really stay in that place and keep going, and so grief does feel a lot different now than it did then. It's gotten harder to help my kids through their grief. That was something that I didn't really have to do at first because I was pregnant when my husband died. I think that's been something super challenging, just seeing the despair in their faces and literally having like nothing good to say. I can hold their hands, I can listen to them, I can talk to them, I can hug them, I can love them, I can allow them to cry, and nothing takes away the pain. When they tell me how lucky I am that I got to meet him and when they tell me how unfair it is that they didn't. So I did step into the dating pool for a while, and I loved again and lost again, and it sucks so much more, I think, after you already have a gaping wound, like to go through a difficult breakup after making yourself vulnerable again when you don't really want to be doing that in the first place. Like, it's just like pouring acid into this open wound that never really gets a chance to heal. So currently not dating, and I feel good about that sometimes. I change my mind often. I like that Anita and Mel said that amazing has a lower bar when you're a widow. So have I accomplished anything amazing since we last talked? I did buy a house, and I'm gonna have to buy a new car. And I feel like those are two things that are really difficult to do alone. So I'll give myself credit for that. I think the advice that I would give to my newly grieving self changes often. I think the things now that are comforting are different. I know that what's comforting just has really shifted over time for me. That when I was first a widow, I wanted to like read everything I could about death and the afterlife, and my religion felt very comforting to me. Right after Mike died, I felt this like sacredness and this higher purpose in everything that was happening, and I felt this big sense of hope and this deeper sense of meaning in just everything. And I think sometimes life can, you know, vacillate between everything meaning something and life meaning nothing at all. And I think I've lately been more on the end of not creating so much meaning out of everything, but life just happened. And oddly, that's been a more comforting place now, that I can choose what meaning to make from it, from what's happened, but that maybe everything doesn't happen for a reason. Grief has been the greatest paradox of feeling hope and despair, joy and pain. I want to share one thing that I wrote last summer. I was writing on a side-by-side in this beautiful country and just missing Mike so much. And I found myself talking to him, longing to share that moment. And this is what I wrote to him. I long to share that moment with you, to believe you would have thought it was so beautiful too, and then I felt you. I'm here, you said. It wasn't your voice I heard, and it wasn't the burning on my skin like I felt before, but I felt you in the wind, in the green growth covering the hills, in the deer walking along and the elk on the hillside. I'm here, you said. I'm here, next to you in the side-by-side, experiencing this beautiful landscape with you. I'm here in the sunset, in the bounce up when you hit a bump, in the deep breaths you take in your nose, in the cold air that starts to warm as it slowly fills your lungs and lingers before you exhale warmer air back through your nose. I'm in the breath. I'm in the cool mountain air. I'm in the dust in your eyes and the tears that start to form. I will sit with you as they form, and I will hold you if they fall. I'm here in the memories of riding four-wheelers and coming home dirt-covered, in the sound of the water racing quickly but peacefully. I know it stung a bit when your brother-in-law handed your sister a Twix because he knew she loved them, and he had an extra one and said, "Oh, here, Carly, do you want this?" He didn't know, but it was from me. I know you love them. I bought them for you on your birthday and Valentine's Day with a Diet Coke. I made sure he had an extra one to give to you. I'm here. In your favorite candy bar, reminding you that you are not forgotten. I'm here, and I'm proud of you. Don't be scared to find me in the silence.
Our last update for this episode is Jenny Taylor. Jenny was featured in episode 41 in October of 2020. Jenny's husband was killed in Afghanistan and was also the mayor of their town. Jenny is an advocate for military families, as well as a mom to 7 children. She's pretty much the greatest. She is our hero. Here she is.
Okay, everybody, this is Jenny Taylor. I am a widow of almost 3 years. I'm the mom of 7 kids, now ages 3 to 16. They were just under 1 and barely 13 when my husband was killed in Afghanistan. We live in northern Utah. We still live in northern Utah in the same city of North Ogden, and we will probably live here the rest of our lives. At least I will. We have not moved or made any drastic changes like that, but we are in the process right now of building a home on the back lot that we have owned for several years. And so basically we're moving to the backyard. So it's the best of both worlds. We're excited to be having a new home and a new space that will better fit our needs and just all of us and all of our stuff. There are a lot of us, but we get to stay in the same neighborhood with the same people that have loved us and helped us and really been there for us through these difficult few years. The community support has just been awesome. Some people I've known for several years. We've lived in this house 7 years. And some people I hardly knew before the day my husband died, and they just have really shown up. And, you know, sometimes they'll just send a text and check on us. Sometimes they'll stop by. For the longest time, they would come over and just clean my messy house, which was awesome and embarrassing at the same time, because no matter how often they came, it was always messy when they got here, and usually pretty messy not long after they left. But just such a labor of love to recognize that, you know, a mom with a bunch of kids, there's so many things you can't necessarily fix in that grief, but the simple act of helping clean up or drop off a meal has been so appreciated. Our support system has changed. I would say it's grown. I've gotten better at asking for help, or at least recognizing when I need to reach out and maybe get some backup. Whereas before, that was really hard for me. Sometimes it still is, to admit I need help, to admit I can't do this, or to be frustrated that my husband's not here to be the one helping me or helping us take care of things in our lives. But I feel like I've grown a lot in that way and realized what a beautiful thing it is to ask for help, to let people help, and the relationships that are formed when we help each other. Have I done anything amazing? I have been a widow now for almost 3 years. It's been almost 4 years since my husband left overseas. And we get out of bed every dang day, and I would call that pretty amazing. And most of the days, we probably get like clothes and shoes on and even brush a tooth or two. But I would say if anything amazing, it would be the opportunities that we've had as a family to participate in some cool military ceremonies. We've been involved with some different media opportunities to speak out about service members and their families and the sacrifices that men and women in uniform make. And it's been really cool to realize it's not us, but what we represent, and that we've kind of been given a chance to join that really incredible, terrible group of people who have given a service member in the cause of freedom. And they're some of the most wonderful people I've ever met. I mean, widows in general are super awesome, but military surviving spouses and surviving kids and surviving parents are just unreal. They've inspired us so much and carried us along, and it's been quite humbling to be a part of that community when it's a community that I've reverenced for a long time. So I kind of feel like I live in the Twilight Zone, because I love America, I love freedom, I love soldiers, I love their families, I love all the good they do, I just want to sing God Bless America. And then it kind of slaps me in the face like, whoa, now I'm in the middle of a different version of that story. And so it's been challenging, but also really rewarding, because I've been able to really evaluate how I do feel about this country, how I do feel about freedom in general, not just in this country, how I do feel about the opportunities that my kids and I have because of people in uniform and people who've been willing to fight for freedom and democracy and opportunity all over the world. So been a crazy 3 years of lots of learning, lots of grieving, lots of stumbling and falling. But I think the amazing thing is we just keep picking ourselves back up, and here we are. If I were to give any advice to my current self, still in those earliest stages of grief, I think I'd have two things to say. One, I would say, is slow down. And just let it be, knowing that you won't always feel that distraught, you won't always feel that hopeless, it won't always be that hard to breathe. And the second thing I would say is write things down. It's such a fog, those early days and weeks and months of grief, where there are great opportunities to learn and to grow. There are kindnesses and little miracles all around us, and there's certain things that happen that you think are etched in your mind and you'll never, ever, ever forget. But the problem is, when you're in that grief fog, you can't remember a dang thing. So if I could give either myself or someone else in the newest, freshest stages of grief, I would say give yourself time, slow down, and just as awful as it is, soak it in. Let yourself pass through those emotions and write down as much as you can about what you think, about what you fear, about what you learn, about your worries, your heartache. And I think those are two ways that we can really all come to grow through our grief and grow through our experiences, and then be better able to help those around us when they face their own grief, whether that's our own kids or a friend or a loved one or a stranger down the street. As we let ourselves really just kind of sit in that grief and move through it at our own pace, not wallowing, but not running or hiding from it. And then when we write down those things, we're better able to see the growth in ourselves and then share some of those lessons with other people.
I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
We are two young widows, and we are just trying to figure out widow.
We
do now.
This is my favorite thing to discuss with you.
Tell me, what is it?
One of my favorite things. I do enjoy tacos and cheese and dogs. This is about how you cannot pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a phone plan, especially when you're a widow, your person is dead, you might have kids, you might need another option, and you just want your phone to work, you want unlimited texting and service, and you want it to be like $25 a month.
It blows my mind that they have plans that start at $15 a month. That is so cheap. And the cool thing is it uses other 5G networks, and so you don't have to pay extra for that, and you still get great service.
Yep. Anita and I have traveled all over, and I have used my phone. So I highly recommend it. And my mom's even on it. When my dad died, we put his phone down to the cheapest plan, which is $15 a month. And I think my mom's on the $20 a month plan, and it's so worth it. It's so much cheaper than what we were all paying before. So I highly recommend it if you're on a budget or not. Who cares? Ryan Reynolds is in charge of the company, and they send you free stickers with Ryan Reynolds temporary tattoos. It's kind of the best. So if somebody wants to sign up, what can they do, Anita?
Go to trymintmobile.com/WWDN. Seriously, you guys, such a great idea. Save yourself some money.
And if you're worried about losing data or having any changes with your phone, not going to happen. They walk you through it. Everything's fine. It's the easiest process of all time. Again, that's
trymintmobile.com/WWDN.